Welcome, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by, yes, it is really him. It's not just a cardboard cutout. He will move occasionally. It is Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. He is currently in actually the beautiful state of Colorado. So thanks for being on the show, Chief. Appreciate it. A shout out to our sponsors, guys. Please support our sponsors to go to the great lengths to bring this good quality content to you. We have our title sponsor, Galls at Galls.com. Don't forget that discount code. Guys, keep this in your pocket. You always have 15% off of Galls because of this show and them being our sponsor. It is Radio 15. So remember that next time you go to Galls.com. Also, ComplyTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. We have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. So check that out. Also, a shout out to all the guys that are helping us do the show and allowing us to stream to various outlets across the internet. Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, Travis Chase with lawofficer.com. And if you want to watch the show, we are live right now on a lot of outlets, and we're on YouTube, we're on Facebook right now. I think we're on 5 Facebook pages. We are on Rumble, we're on Vimeo, LinkedIn. I mean, you name it. Now, we're also on podcasts. We're on, if it's a podcast platform, we're going to be on it, but especially Spotify and Apple iTunes, two of the biggest. We're also social media, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, formerly X, True Social. We've got the live version of the show, a produced version of the show that comes out the next morning at 9 o'clock that has all the videos we talk about embedded into it. So we've got a lot of stuff going on, and we're 5 days a week. So again, that is during the lunch hour, 12 noon Eastern time. So let's go into whet the appetite, Chief. And you know, we always joke, the Chief and I, when he's been doing Mondays lately. And also Ralph Ornelas, Chief Ralph, wanted me to let you know that he misses you on Fridays, by the way. He really does. And but the Chief and I, Chief Schultz and I joke about having, after the weekend, we have some deep topics, basically. We have deep commentary, and he's perfect for that stuff. And I don't know that we really have the deep stuff today. We have some pretty comical stuff today, but some of the stuff that we've talked about, we've got new information on it as well. So the two main topics, they do have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there. I haven't been covering it because, you know, I don't trust the Iranians, but Trump said, hey, start your engines. Trump declares Iran a peace deal complete, lifts naval blockade. But of course, something in the news could have happened between the time I put this, you know, in my show notes and we're going live. Also, plunging pride in USA with a question mark. Why only a third of Americans are still extremely proud today? That is worrisome. That is going to be our deepest topic today. And perfect to have the Chief on. Also, horseplay shooting. We covered this last week. There's an update. There is an opening with the Pasadena County Sheriff's Office. We've got, I guess it's the city, Pasadena Police. Horseplay shooting between Pasadena cops. Unacceptable behavior, mayor says. And yeah, one of the guys got fired. We got Sacramento deputy. Wow, this is Pasadena Police, and now we're jumping over to Sacramento. A deputy fatally shoots a suspect who pulls out a shotgun during a woman in distress call. I'm surprised I have any fingernails left after watching that video, Chief, and I can't wait to hear you talk about that. Then we have Miami-Dade Sheriff's Office. They released body cam of a deputy shooting an unarmed 15-year-old. You know, after watching this video, Chief, I'm kind of I'm on the team that suspects that if we watch videos of uses of force, and we couldn't tell what agency, we couldn't see the patches to see who they were, I bet you that we could come pretty close to guessing where they work at. So, I mean, I'm just thinking this Miami one. And then we got hot grease and stabbing. Michigan drive-through dispute. It ends in an attempted murder charge. And then we got a body cam video released in a fatal Tucson police shooting involving a guy that's armed with a knife. So all those stories, as we have time to get to them. So let's go and start for the first one right now. Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Start your engines. Trump declares Iran peace deal complete, lifts naval blockade. Now, look, you never, the big deal with number one, I don't think, no one in their right mind should trust anything that comes out of the Iranian's mouth. If they're Iranian and their lips are moving, they're going to be lying. And we don't even know, they don't even know who's running the country. There's so many factions that are at dispute with each other. However, the United States and Iran have officially reached a peace agreement, according to President Donald Trump, bringing an end to the months of military conflict, immediately halting the U.S. naval blockade on Iranian ports, which is a good thing, right? As long as we have oversight. President Trump announced the finalization of the pact on Sunday in a post on Truth Social. I love the fact that he uses Truth Social. He doesn't have to rely on the media to get the stuff out. The deal with the Islamic Republic of Iran is now complete. Congratulations to all, is what Trump wrote. He also goes on to say that he fully authorized the toll-free opening of the highly contested Strait of Hormuz, and as well as the immediate removal of the naval blockade. Wow, that's big, because they've been sitting there for a while. The president ended his announcement with a message of global maritime commerce. Ships of the world, start your engines to let the oil flow. He's always animated when he does this stuff. On Saturday, Pakistani Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif, acting as the lead mediator, he accurately predicted that the finalization of the agreement was expected within 24 hours. So, and that's what they're saying happened. So that's what we have. I don't know how much faith you have, Chief, in this being binding, or the other guys doing what they're supposed to be doing. We don't even have the exact terms of the agreement yet. But Chief Schultz,
you know, a friend of mine texted last night and said, "What do you think about this deal?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to see what the markets say." So even before today's opening, the NASDAQ's up. All of them are up. Small caps are up. Gold is even up, which is a little contrarianism. But you played Simon Says when you were a kid, right? Say Simon Says, touch your nose. Simon Says, wink. Pull your ear. Oh, yeah, I didn't say Simon Says. So, you know, you're out of the game. And Iran's playing this game all the time. So, if they're going to claim we didn't say Simon Says, their penalty is not that you're out of the game. We're going to throw a drone at a oil tanker or shoot down a U.S. helicopter or something like that. So I'm less optimistic than the markets are. Oil is down back to almost not quite pre-war level, but the first week of the war. So all the economic trigger signs are good and optimistic. It's interesting, and I'm not a foreign analyst, and so you've got some high dollar panelists that really keep their fingers on the pulse of international diplomacy and intrigue and that kind of stuff. But what's the wild card to me is Netanyahu, because he seems to have his own course. And lately, you've seen President Trump like literally cussing out Netanyahu, who everybody was accusing them of being in bed together and were only in the war because Bibi wanted him to be. So it's very interesting that there's this apparent friction. Now, again, with the Trump administration, you don't know what's fact and what's theater. And so he may have been, and this may be out there, but Trump may have been presenting this pretend frictious relationship between him and Israel's Netanyahu to make it seem to the Iranians that maybe that Israeli influence is less. But I think Israel is going to continue to antagonize, and rightly so, Hezbollah, which, of course, is just the left hand of the Iranian government. And as you said, we don't really know who's in charge. And just because you say to somebody that says that they're in charge, we're going to do this treaty, you still don't know what kind of pockets of resistance or miscommunication or military authority. Somebody could still pop off a drain or hit the red button on a missile and really put this whole thing in peril. So I'm skeptical, I think, like every American is. But I also have faith in our chief negotiator that if this falls through, some more bombs are going to fall and some more suffering for the Iranian regime is going to happen. And eventually they'll be broken.
Thank you, Chief. We will watch this, but I suspect that there will be, there's no way these guys are not going to push the edge of the limit. So
the psychologists always say you teach people how to treat you, you know, the way that you respond to them and communicate with them and put up with them. And Iran has certainly taught the U.S. And I think Trump probably should have known this, and people that have studied Iran know this. But it's not peer-to-peer. It's not a matter of power. It's not a matter of religion. It's just a matter of world outlook and life philosophy. They really don't care if all of their people die. They don't care if they die. They've got to maintain their pride. They've got to maintain their trust in their eternal reward for being an enemy of the great state, the United States. So to communicate between the parties of freedom and the parties of tyrants is it's not a one-to-one conversation. So like you say, we'll just have to see what happens.
Agreed. Well, next we've got Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. We've got Plunging Pride in the USA, Why Only a Third of Americans Are Still Extremely Proud Today. Now, this is troubling, guys. I don't know if people hear this title, whatever. Listen, this is really serious stuff. And when you find out how this thing falls, like what some of the influencers are on this, why we've gotten here, that should really get you thinking. It should be alarming. So I'm going to go through as much of this as I can. I know that we're about a minute off from going to our first commercial break, but according to our article, fewer people are feeling a strong sense of national pride these days. New polling data shared on Sunday shows a steep drop in how America feel about the country, the USA, with only a third of respondents saying that they are extremely proud to be Americans. Now, the poll was put together for NBC News, but don't freak out. There was a bipartisan team, Democratic pollster Jeff Horwitt of Hart Research Associates, and then a Republican pollster, McErntiff. He's with Public Opinion Strategies, and these guys were both part of this. Their findings highlight a massive shift from 2003, when 70% of people surveyed described themselves as extremely proud. 70. Wow, that is huge, a huge difference. So I'm going to stop there. Guys, we got our first commercial break coming up. Just stick with us. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing. That I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. And we left off talking about an interesting story here. I'm going to jump back into it. It's called Plunging Pride in USA, Why Only a Third of Americans Are Still Extremely Proud Today. They did a comparison. They did a survey back in 2003. 70% of people surveyed describe themselves as being extremely proud. But now it says that only a third of Americans, around 33%, are there. So NBC data reporter Steve Kornacki, he broke down the numbers on Meet the Press. He was speaking with the host Kristen Welker, and he pointed out that combining the extremely proud and the very proud groups, so the two most positive, they actually make up about 56%. Today. So, but you have to lower the very proud, or the extremely proud to the very proud, but that makes a slight majority. And he said, look, extremely proud, very proud, those numbers together get you to 56%. But he goes, at the other end of it, only a little bit proud or not proud at all, that makes up 21%. And he emphasized the long-term trend, adding that the significance of this number is in decline. So implying that it's still declining. He said a steady 21st century decline. At the turn of the century, 3/4 of Americans were extremely or very proud, and that number has fallen to 56%. So the drop isn't happening equally across the board, and this is another alarming fact. Kornacki said that the political leanings play a huge role in who feels proud right now and who does not. And he goes, what's behind this? And he goes, it's a familiar fault line. He said it's political demographic. And he goes, first, It's partisan. Again, look at this, because Republicans are almost universally going to tell you that they are extremely or very proud. And he goes, look at that number for Democrats. And meanwhile, only a little or not at all, they are 12 times as many Democrats say that compared to Republicans. So 12 times as many Democrats compared to Republicans are saying that they're only a little or not proud at all. So Americans are also losing faith in major establishments like, well, across the board. Listen, the examples he gives, Congress, the federal government, religious groups, the Supreme Court, and news media. So when you factor all this in, declining pride in the USA, it falls along partisan lines, and a huge correlation with that is where they get their news, you know, who they let into their brain and into their home. Chief Schultz.
You know, I was trying to do a kind of a Venn diagram of all of the factors that might be involved in this loss of pride in America. I remember the bicentennial, you know, in 1976 and the pride and the celebrations. And now we're at 250 and, you know, who cares? You know, it's really kind of stunning. But if you look at all of the institutions, and I think your analyst alluded to this, if you look at all of our institutions, we don't have loyalty to our employers anymore. We have fewer and fewer like lifetime committed career people at police agencies, for example, or corporations. And that loyalty thing goes both ways. Families are not what they used to be. Loyalty to churches or denominations is not what it used to be. So this whole idea of I am loyal because the institution merits some respect and loyalty has really eroded to the point that I don't know if we can recover or not. I just wrote a piece just on my own blog about Juneteenth, which is coming up. And we're going to hear about, you know, we haven't made enough progress. We need reparations. We're still a racist country. But Chip, you're not quite as old as I am. But listen, within my lifetime, I lived in a place where there were still small towns that had signs at the city limits that said no coloreds after dark. We had places where if a black kid would sneak into the public swimming pool, they would drain the pool and refill it. I lived in an era where I watched the riots in New York and Selma and Detroit and Chicago, where blacks could not step into schoolhouses, public schoolhouses. They could not step into public universities. That's all within my lifetime. If we don't celebrate the successes, if we don't remember that we have heroes, even if they're flawed, Thomas Jefferson, brilliant, but he was a slave owner. George Washington, amazing, setting precedents for our presidency, but a slave owner. Confederate generals, you know, I get it. They were rebels, but there was a certain amount of loyalty and there's just so many things that we ought to be celebrating. And it doesn't mean that we ignore our flaws or say that we've been perfected. But if you can't for a moment look over the scope of history over the last 250 years on this continent and not say that this is the greatest land that has ever been on the face of the earth. It is the most democratic, the most free, the most economic opportunity. If you can't say that, then you are absolutely blind to the reality of history. And if we don't establish that as a foundation of merit and an aspiration, then we're not going to be able to have a foundation to build on. So we just need to celebrate what we've accomplished, admit what needs to be changed, work to change that with love and pride and appreciation for where we are. So I'm appalled by this report. I'm not surprised by this report.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I'm glad you touched on some of those advancements that we've made. It's I haven't seen quite all those things that you know that you described, but horrific. But what I have seen is I've seen this country elect a Muslim black president. He got not just the electoral votes, he got the popular vote. Not just once, that's twice. So our racial, and I tell people, that are close to me. I said, I think that we have bred out the racism that previously existed in America. I think that we have bred it out of most people. I mean, even the numbers with Obama getting the popular vote helps prove that. The advancements, people should be, I mean, I wake up every day and I'm not only so glad that I'm here in America, I'm glad that I'm born and alive in this day and age with all the things that we get to witness. It's because I could have been born 20 or 30 years earlier, you know, and missed all this stuff. So yeah, I'm very thankful and grateful. And a lot of that I realize comes from God, but I get it. But commercial break, guys, stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, now it is time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And, you know, they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them the Chip sent you. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief in Colorado, no less. And Chief, are you ready to jump over to Pasadena, California, real quick?
Yeah. We need to talk about that.
Yeah, we covered it last week, and I don't know if you were on that show or not, where it's the horseplay incident, but ABC7.com, horseplay shooting between Pasadena cops, unacceptable behavior. This is the mayor talking. So Pasadena Mayor Victor Gordo is not mincing words as he describes his disappointment after a video emerged of a police officer shooting a colleague in an incident that the department described as horseplay. He said it's juvenile, it's unacceptable behavior at the highest level on the part of these officers. And this is what the Mayor Gordo told Eyewitness News. The incident occurred in September. Well, I'm not going to tell you guys what happened. I mean, you know, I can't get the imprint of this thing going, you know, out of my head. You got a couple cops look young. They're standing behind a patrol car in a police parking garage. It's clearly they got police vehicles everywhere. And you got a cruiser that rolls in behind them. And so he's in front of the cruiser, and we're watching the dash cam. And so the two young officers that are behind the car that are in front of our cruiser now that we're watching with the dash cam on, the one on the right, he looks at you can see him looking at the driver and holsters his weapon, and he points it seemingly at the driver of the car that just pulled up. Then he holsters it. And what we don't see, because we're looking at the dash cam, not a body cam, the driver apparently unholsters his gun and he goes to point it at the guy. He's returning the favor. He's going to point it at the guy that's in front of his car that just pointed his firearm and holstered in front of him. Well, when he does that, and he, for whatever reason, must pull the trigger because the gun discharges and the bullet goes not just through the windshield, but it hits the cop that had just drawn down on him and holstered, and he hits the guy in the shoulder. So much for saying shooting through windshields is not accurate, Chief. So you can see the guy getting hit in the shoulder. He runs around. He's got the guy next to him, and then I think another colleague runs up, and the guy that shot him gets out of the car, and they run up, and they're tending to him and everything. So anyhow, that's what happened. It was a horseplay incident, but it was something. They were both, even the dude that got shot, he started it by doing the same thing, except he didn't pull the trigger. So Police Chief Gene Harris identified the officer who shot his colleague as Officer Roy Alator and said that he has been fired from the department. And previously last week, they said that we've disciplined the officers involved. They didn't say anything about firing anybody, but now that guy's been fired. The officer who was wounded, who drew down first, he has recovered and remains employed by the Pasadena Police Department. Interesting. And they go on to talk about how horseplay, safety rules, it's not their standard of professionalism, which I get it. I'm glad the chief did that, but we get that. The mayor expressed relief that there were not more serious consequences like, you know, an innocent civilian or someone getting injured. So there you have it. Now, Chief Schultz, I know you've been at a couple agencies. I can only imagine how you would hate this. I know this is one of these things you would hate to happen under your watch, but what do you think about this?
I think they did mince words. I think the chief and the mayor backpedaled way too much, even though, you know, they're claiming that they were stern. And the words that you quoted from the article is horseplay, failure to adhere to safety rules, regretful conduct. Mayor said, the chief said, this is not going to happen again. There needs to be two criminal prosecutions for both officers who negligently assaulted one another with a loaded city issued firearm. There's no excuse. There's no light terminology, horseplay, unfortunate, regrettable incident. This is not who we are. And then I think, Chief, you need to do a top-down review of safety policies, of the attitude and culture of the department. And I hope this is not reflective. I hope this is two knuckleheads that just weren't thinking straight. But, when you have something like this happens, we like to eat fruit in our family. And so, you know, we take them out of the package from the store and put them in a container so that they'll last longer. But when you have, this is the bad apple analogy. When you have a strawberry, it's got a little mold on it. You not only take that out, but you look at the rest of the strawberries and see if they've been affected. So now, I'm not saying that this is a widespread problem with this particular agency, but you better root it out and make sure that it's not, that there's not some kind of underlying subcultural context to this crazy criminal behavior, and make sure that it doesn't happen again, not by saying, no, that's not going to happen again, because you've got to ensure that is never going to happen again. This makes my blood boil. It's outrageous. And I'm against horseplay and practical jokes everywhere, including police work. I've been on, the end of some practical jokes, and I just hate it. I detest it. It's unprofessional. Police work is fun enough without trying to inject some teenage levity into all of this. Have I made my point clear on this issue?
You would have hated working with me, Chief. All I can tell you with the horse, I'll tell a story in a minute. But in all seriousness, before I get to my story, and I've never had the word the chief hat or the sheriff hat, but I'm smart enough to know that. They have put, no, I agree, the chief handled this in one way, and I would have liked to have seen something else. But if I'm working at that agency and I'm wearing a chief hat, now he's put me in a position where I have to go down that rabbit hole and see how bad and widespread this is from an apartment, because God forbid it happens again.
Right,
and I
exactly.
Didn't do that, we are going to be writing the check. And so I absolutely have to. I would consider, look, the guy that got shot, there has got to be discipline for him. And I'm not saying necessarily fired, although it needs to be on the table, but if he's working for me, he's at least getting some serious days off for what he did. And I know he got shot, he's recovered, but he's getting days off. It, especially if I'm firing that other guy, this guy's at least going to get, time off without pay. So I would like to see it. It's got to be done better than what is being done. But yeah, that whole liability thing, now he has to do it.
Yeah. So he cannot have any other firearms related infractions for the next 20 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Or yeah, he's screwed. I mean, yeah. So when I was young, look, I'm 21 years old. I was
okay. Leave me time to tell my story, but go ahead.
All right. Okay. When I was a rookie, clearly I was on my first squad. I would run around. We worked midnights. I would run, and I got a little cap gun, and I would go around and I would surprise people. I would ambush them, and I would throw the cap, and it was night and the sparks would fly and stuff, but they knew it was me. But they called me to like a meeting, and then they ambushed me. And I remember being in a horizontal position in the air and everybody holding me, and they're disarming me for the cap gun, the caps. And they totally, that's how they handled that little problem, and it went away. But I mean, young and stupid, doing stupid stuff. So yeah, so that was pretty pretty bad. But I grew up after that, believe it or not. Go ahead.
Well, I think in addition to what those officers did to you, you should have taken a pretty stern beating, but you got away pretty easily with that. No, I had a partner with a couple of us on midnight shift, and there was a real estate company in our town that had a frontiersman. It was Frontier Realty, and so he was handing a rifle. So this other officer, and Steve, you know who I'm talking about, said 115, we have a report of a man with a gun in front of, you know, such and such a location. So I screened up there expecting a man with a gun, you know, ready to fight it out, shoot it, sneak up, whatever. And it was just this icon, this little wooden statue of the frontiersman with a musket. I was not amused. Steve continued. I saw him like years later, and I wrote a Police One article about this on the topic of practical jokes. Wow. He knew who I was talking about. I met him at a alumni meeting, and he was still snickering about that. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I won't tell any other stories because I want you to have respect for me at the end of the show. So anyhow. But so that's the latest update. So I'm not surprised they fired the guy. I was kind of expecting to see that last week because I was just thinking, if that guy worked for me, and you know, how do they not fire him? So, and let him fight to get his job back. But I don't think you're going to see that happen. So we've got a little over a minute, guys. So let's go to our first story with the video component, and we're in Sacramento. So Rumble.com. This is Butter. Or did you have something you want to add, Chief? Or
actually, Chip, if we could go, or at least maybe make sure and get there, the deputy that deals with the shotgun and the distressed woman, there's so much psychology we need to talk about this officer who is acting totally inappropriately. I'm just mad about that. But if we want to talk about Sacramento,
we can. I'm just trying to find that here. This is the this is it. Sacramento, the shotgun during a woman in distress call. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, is that it? Yeah,
that's this call. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good.
So we have less than 30 seconds left. So let me just whet the appetite. Sacramento deputy fatally shoots a suspect who pulls out a shotgun during a woman in distress call. Guys, this is really something. This is the one I'm surprised I have fingernails left on. You don't want to miss this. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And hey, there was some new stuff going on with GunLearn in case you guys haven't heard. So pay attention. And GunLearn.com, for starters, they are the first and they are the only company that offers a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. Now, here's the deal. That certification, that certified firearm specialist certification, now it's worth college credits because GunLearn.com, they partner with Smarter Degree and their university partners. Even if you got that certification 5 years ago, it's now worth college credits. That's a huge deal. And of course, they've been doing this back since 1996. They've been teaching everything that LEOs, law enforcement officers, need to know about both firearms and also ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. Now, you can start the day with online training or you can sign up to attend a live seminar. And if you're chief or sheriff, you can even host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. And we left off whetting the appetite on this next story. It's from rumble.com. This is Butter, which is our favorite law enforcement video channel. We got Sacramento deputy fatally shoots a suspect who pulls out a shotgun during a woman in distress call.
All right, sounds good. Let me, I'm going to kind of work through this right now. So, but for right now, I got to keep everybody here right now. I'll wait for one more. Okay. So, what I do, I'm just going to place you in handcuffs right now.
Yeah.
Now, you could make me drop the gun. Hey, one boy. Drop the gun. Just drop it, man. Come on. Just drop the gun. You don't want to do this. Just drop it. Come on. Boy 1, he is walking northbound with a gun in his hand still. He's not pointing it at me right now. He's trying to get me to shoot him right now. I will shoot you. Come on. Stay down. Stay down. Stay down. 8-1 boy, one. Shots fired. Shots fired. That's a bit down. Do not go for the gun. Do not go for the gun. Drop the gun. Drop the gun, sir. Drop the gun.
So, first flag, we're in Sacramento. So we are in California, okay? So that should help explain what you're getting ready to hear, which is going to drive most people crazy. A suspect who pulled out a shotgun on a Sacramento sheriff's deputy was shot and killed by law enforcement near Galt is the area. But he wasn't shot and killed right away. So according to the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office, and I didn't know we had sheriff's offices in California, so I'm kind of thinking they got it wrong, unless Sacramento is an office and not a department, but I suspect they're a department. But anyhow, the deputies responded to a call for service about a woman possibly in distress, and she's on the side of the road in a silver sedan. So this happens. This is about 7 o'clock in the morning, so a little unusual with a time of day for a call like this going out. But a lone deputy responds. He sees the car with a man inside and the woman, and he contacts them, and the woman lets the deputy know that she does not feel safe. So the deputy moves her into his cruiser and puts her in the back seat. So now he gets out, and now he's dealing with the guy, and they're at the rear of the car, and the hatch is open to the back of the car, the hatchback or trunk area, whatever you want to call it. And so the deputy standing facing the suspect, and to behind the suspect is got this open hatch for the, you know, the stuff in the car. So as the deputy is beginning to investigate, it says the guy grabs a shotgun from his car. Well, let's go ahead. They're leaving some critical stuff out, Chief, because just before that happens, the cop tells him, and he's asking questions. He goes, "Hey, he just called for backup. The guy can clearly hear him on the radio." And then he tells the guy, in case he missed it, "I just called for essentially backup. I'm waiting for someone to arrive." And he goes, "And okay, you know," and then he goes, "and I'm gonna go ahead and I want to go ahead and put you in handcuffs." And as soon as he says the word handcuffs, oh no. The guy says, "Oh no." And he takes a step back, he reaches in, and he pulls out a shotgun that's in the rear of the vehicle, because, you know, he's letting him stand there with the hatch open. He doesn't take the shotgun all the way out at first. He kind of picks it up and he's holding it suspended. I'm still, you know, in the technically, you know, in the hatch area of the car, but he's got it in his hand. Now the deputy starts giving the commands to drop it, and he starts creating distance, and he backs up behind his car, his cruiser. Through a long dialogue of a minute or two, he allows this bad guy holding the shotgun, who steps away from the car and clearly holding the shotgun now, he allows the guy to obtain cover using the cop's cruiser. And so now the cop no longer has a good line of sight of him, and no longer can, you know, if the guy wants to drop down to the ground and use a shotgun and shoot the deputy underneath the car or whatever, or he wants to shoot the female that he had the altercation with that's in the car, because the deputy's responsible for her safety as well. Now the deputy's at a huge disadvantage because he let the guy get out of his view, and now the guy's got not concealment, but he's also got cover. And so this goes on for a while, for too long. The guy backs away. Now he goes in a field, backup comes. It looks like, I think a female showed up with like a rifle, and we have a male officer showing up with a shotgun. I couldn't find out where they actually finally shot and killed this guy, but apparently that happened. So many things bothered me with this that went on for so long. But of course, we are in California. We've got almost 6 minutes. Chief Schultz.
Yeah, I don't know. I would really encourage people to look at your produced show tomorrow and watch that video or look it up. It was so distressing. That here's a couple of psychological things that I think we can take away from this. First of all, I would almost bet you that this officer was an A student in the academic part of the academy. He was prepared to do police procedure. He was not prepared to deal with an uncooperative suspect. He had no warrior mindset. I know we're not supposed to talk about the warrior mindset, but he had no sense of, I've got to take this situation and control it. He let the suspect control it from the very beginning. And so there's two psychological things I want to talk about. One is, he stayed within his realm of competency. It's obvious that he did not know what to do with the potentially combative and even lethally armed suspect. So he reverted to the things that he was comfortable with. He was running license plates. He was asking for ID. He was calling in and giving descriptions. He was trying to negotiate and make a connection with this guy. All the things that he knew how to do because that was out of the textbook. Now, I've been accused because of my education of being, you're pretty good at that book learning stuff. Well, I am good at that book learning stuff, but I can also take care of business when I need to take care of business. This guy absolutely did not. So we retreat to our area of competency, the things that we know that we can control, you know, talking on the radio, blah, blah, blah. Now, the other thing is the core difference between the police mindset and the civilian mindset is dealing with cognitive dissonance. And I'll tell you a quick story if I can. We were in Kansas City. My wife and I are walking down to try to find a Starbucks. And she saw this guy walking down the street in the street, but close to the parked cars, and kept looking into the cars. And she's been married to me long enough to be suspicious of just about everybody, including me. And so she said, "Hey, look at that." So I looked at that. And so for the average civilian, you'd look at that and you'd say, "Well, that's weird. That's putting a little distress in my mind, cognitive dissonance." And so I got to resolve that tension in my mind. I'm going to resolve it by making up an explanation for what this person is doing that fits with my normal life and mindset. So, okay, the guy probably is looking for his keys in the car or something, or he's, whatever, make up some kind of story. My mindset, as well as my wife's, bless her heart, was, why is this guy looking into cars? Why is he not on the sidewalk? Why is he in the street? And so it became clear to me that this guy was likely looking for keys in the car or something you break into and get. This was on the plaza in Kansas City, really beautiful place. So when this officer with his civilian mindset sees this guy poking around in his layered clothing, poking around in the front of the car, holding his shotgun, this guy must be thinking, "Oh, he's not going to hurt me. I just need to have a conversation with him because I don't want to kill him." So he's relieving his cognitive dissonance, not from a police mindset, but from a, "This is just another fellow human being and I'm trying to understand him" mindset, which gets cops killed.
Wow. Yeah, you're spot on. It was tough to watch, wasn't it? Wasn't it, Chief? And then I'm worried about the girl in the car too.
Absolutely. But. And at one time the cop's taking a position and the bad guy's taking a position. They both got long guns out and the girl is in between freaking out. And there was a point at which when there were enough officers on the scene, she should have been evacuated, rescued out of there and taken away. Absolutely. Cause she Absolutely. Was that result. And then the other thing, if I can continue my rant here. When the backup officers got there, there was no teamwork. The guy that came out with the long gun and took a position of cover behind the door of the suspect vehicle when the suspect was away a little bit and on the ground already shot. First of all, you saw him loading his shotgun, so that was not combat ready. Right. And he kept looking over at the original officer like, you know, "What are we going to do here? Why haven't you killed this guy yet?" And then the third officer comes and parks down the road, maybe to block traffic or something, but absolutely tactically exposed all the way down to an armed suspect call, shots already fired, away from any cover or concealment. So there was no coordination, no teamwork. And the first officer on the scene, you're scene commander. You tell these officers how to deploy safely and effectively. I didn't hear any of that. But the dispatcher knew what was going on because the first officer delighted in narrating the whole play-by-play.
Oh my gosh. Radio was his best friend, was it not? I mean, oh my gosh, just take care of business. It just drives me crazy. They can't live without that radio. And then, of course, he had a pistol, and so he's doing the one-handed thing with the pistol because he's, you know, got to have the radio thing in his hand. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was his security blanket. And you knew he was waiting for backup, not because it was the tactical thing to do. It was, he wanted somebody else to handle the situation.
He had to. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, it's been another fantastic show, Chief Schultz. This is, again, we get these deep topics. I love it when you're on the show and we go down the rabbit hole. So I'm glad we're able to cover this one. So
I need blood pressure medicine.
You need it now. Yeah. Hey, I want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. And, I donate to them monthly. If you guys are interested or curious about the Wounded Blue, go to thewoundedblue.org, check them out. I donate, like I said, monthly, and it's a great organization to donate to, and I don't have to worry about them embarrassing me. And I also want to mention, guys, don't forget, I also have relaunched leoaffairs.ch. It allows cops and agencies or sheriff's deputies to talk with anonymity without fear of repercussion about what's going on inside your agency. I previously sold another version of the site. They shut it down. I'm relaunching it as leoaffairs.ch. So please check that out and sign up. And support our sponsors, gullis.com. Don't forget, discount code radio15, complytechnologies.com, gunlearn.com, mymedicare.com, Life and twobells.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.